I'm Donald MacLeod, and thanks for downloading this highlights version of Composer of the Week. There's information on all the music you'll hear, as well as our terms of use, on the Radio 3 website at bbc.co.uk/radio3. In 1821, a memorial monument to a composer was consecrated amid the Baroque splendour of the Monastery Church of St. Peter in Salzburg. The composer commemorated by it was admired by Joseph Haydn, Carl Maria von Weber, and later Franz Schubert, and was considered, undisputably, the master of music in the city. He died with an unfinished requiem on the table before him. I've led you to the point where I suppose you're imagining if we get close enough to this monument to read the inscription, the name we'll read there will be Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Consider yourself to have been led gently but deliberately up a Salzburg garden path. No, the good citizens of Salzburg wouldn't get round to putting up a monument to the city's most famous son for another 20 years. Beneath the tall black marble urn which stands on top of the memorial, inscribed in gold letters on a black marble slab, is the name Michaeli Haydn, Joseph's brother Michael. This week I'll be exploring the life and music of the man they called the Salzburg Haydn. Last movement of Michael Haydn's Symphony No. 41. Definite hints of Mozart's Symphony No. 41, the Jupiter, in that final fugal movement. Haydn's symphony dates from around 1779, so a few years before Mozart's Jupiter. As the destinies of so many composers have shown us week after week, history can be a cruel mistress, and it's hard to imagine better evidence of that than Michael Haydn's case. The choice he made was to remain in safe and settled provincial security rather than take the opportunities and the risks of moving into more illustrious circles. And, of course, it was perhaps his greatest misfortune to have been the younger brother to Joseph Haydn, whose international reputation totally eclipsed him. Though, as we'll hear, that wasn't something that was obvious from the beginning. Michael Haydn may have got his monument in Salzburg first, but his life is not Mozart's life, not one of racy anecdotes, of stormy relationships with employers or adventurous trips from home, setting out to conquer the world, of encounters with princes, kings and emperors, of witty letters full of scatological humour. Haydn seems to have been content to operate within a small, familiar world, providing music of high quality to the nobility and middle classes. He bridges the restless times between the Baroque and Romantic eras, between old and new values, and despite all of the social upheaval around him, and disregarding for the moment some sideswipes from Leopold Mozart, his story conveys a steady sort of personality. His music, if it's unlikely to blow us out of our seats, seems to reflect his endearing, friendly, unposturing nature, with sometimes a moving, beguiling intimacy. Michael Haydn was born on the 14th of September 1737 to Matthias and Maria Koller Haydn in the village of Rohrau on the river Leitha, near the current border between Austria and Hungary, where Papa Haydn, Franz Josef, was a wheelwright and a member of the village council. Michael came into the world 5 years after his brother Joseph. We're told that in their tender childhood, their parents instilled a love of music in both brothers. Someone must have recognised that both boys had exceptional voices, because first Joseph and later Michael got places in the choir school of St. Stephen's Cathedral in Vienna, about 50 kilometres away from Rohrau. Michael joined the choir in 1745, when he was 8, and the accounts we have suggest that his performances were soon putting his big brother in the shade. Supposedly, the Empress Maria Theresa showed a preference for Michael's voice over Joseph's, and we're told that on one occasion in 1748, Michael sang a Salve Regina with such magic that both their imperial majesties were moved personally to inquire about his age, his origins, and the course of his education, and each presented him with a gift of 12 ducats. Joseph's nose presumably seriously out of joint, as his voice was probably beginning to break around then. Alongside singing at St. Stephen's, Michael learned to play the organ, harpsichord and violin. By his 12th birthday, he was earning extra money as a substitute organist at the cathedral, where he'd sometimes play preludes and fantasies he'd composed himself. The big influence on him at this stage was Johann Joseph Fuchs, the composer whose music he studied most. Before he was 20, Michael was writing large-scale choral works, clearly with Fuchs as his model, as those fortunate enough to be familiar with Fuchs's music can probably detect in this early setting of the Mass, Sancte Crucis. Young Michael didn't actually compose that setting of the Mass in Vienna, but at the first stop on the short provincial branch line, before railways existed, that would lead him directly to the terminus where he'd work out the rest of his career. This temporary halt was called Großwardein. Just as he'd heard his big brother's voice reach its peak and break, the same hormonal trajectory led younger brother Michael, in his turn, to the same destination. Boys' voices broke later in the mid-18th century, and so he was probably around 16 or 17 by the time he left the choir of St. Stephen's Cathedral in Vienna. He may then have spent about a year at the Jesuit seminary in Vienna, whilst continuing to play the organ, possibly at St. Stephen's, and also with his former classmate Johann Georg Albrechtsberger in the Jesuit church. There's a bit of a vague gap in the record of 4 or 5 years during which Michael Haydn may have operated as a freelance organist in Vienna, before we find him turning up in 1760 in what was his first Pucker appointment as director of music to the new bishop of Großwardein, Baron Adam Patacic, a man renowned for his love of music. Großwardein is a city of many names, Varadinum, Varad, Nagyvarad, now the city of Oradea in Romania, which claims for itself to be the gateway to Central and Western Europe. It's certainly a place with a many-layered history, the burial place of a line of Hungarian kings. It's been much fought over. At the time Haydn lived there, it was experiencing something of a golden age under the Habsburgs, steadily recovering from very bleak times in the 17th century when it had been plundered and practically razed to the ground during a protracted siege by the Ottomans, which lasted 14 months. The material and cultural devastation wreaked on the city was such that it almost disappeared off the map altogether. But the Habsburgs brought in an engineer, Franz Anton Hildebrandt, who set about planning the entire city in Baroque style, including a new cathedral, a splendid theatre, and a magnificent new palace for Haydn's boss. This modest episcopal abode had 365 windows, obviously one for each day of the year, and its 120 rooms were spread out over 3 floors. It was built along the lines of the Belvedere Palace in Vienna, and when the Empress Maria Theresa got to hear of this, she was not amused. Patacic found himself imperially repudiated and sent to another, more remote diocese in Hungary. But that was after Haydn had left his service. He was able to enjoy the lavish conditions that prevailed during Patacic's time in Großwardein, when he had 26 musicians working under him. We know more about what musical life at the bishop's court was like from the account left by Haydn's successor in Grossfontein, Karl Ditter von Dittersdorf. He wrote about the regular academies held at the palace on Sundays and Tuesdays, when the nobility, clergy and imperial military would be invited to orchestral concerts at which symphonies and concertos were performed. The bishop's name day was always an excuse to push the boat out, and the musical celebrations for that would involve months of preparation of specially congratulatory cantatas and symphonic works, as well as theatre performances, balls and masked processions. We know of at least six symphonies which Haydn composed for the bishop and performed at those frequent and fashionable academies at the episcopal residence. This is one of them. It begins with energetic leaps, trills and syncopating rhythms. At this stage of the game, there's no question that the younger brother was ahead. The great biographer of Joseph Haydn, H.C. Robbins Landon, said that Michael was the more accomplished composer. Joseph hadn't yet got an official appointment. That wouldn't come until 1759. That was also the year when the famous Benedictine monastery of Gürtfegg acquired their first Haydn manuscript, and that was of a work by Michael, a Mass in C. It would be another 3 years before a work by Joseph appeared in the Gürtfegg library. Haydn certainly wrote a great deal of music during his 5 years in the service of the bishop in Grossfontein. The bishop's orchestra, which he was in charge of, played the music for the services in the cathedral, and they also gave those chamber and orchestral concerts in the palace that I mentioned. Interestingly, one of the symphonies Michael wrote for the bishop was so successful it made its way to London, where it appeared in print, attributed to Joseph. As Robbins Landon said, it's easy to imagine the kind of confusion that arose between the two brothers' compositions in faraway places. Of the total of 50 symphonies Michael would eventually compose, many were attributed to Joseph at one time. Although they're small in proportion and simple in their orchestration, taken together, the works Michael composed before his move to Salzburg represented a pretty formidable accomplishment. 15 symphonies, 14 masses, 6 divertimentos for strings, several wind partitas and a few concertos, as well as a number of settings of Latin texts for 4-part chorus with orchestra. It seems that while the setup at Grossfontein was all very lavish and played out in splendid Baroque surroundings, the salary the bishop paid Haydn was pretty meagre, so he supplemented his income with those compositions. I mentioned the bishop's name day celebrations. Haydn wrote a pair of violin concertos for the occasion in 1760. St. Adam's Day is the 20th of December. Michael showed his musical versatility when he took up his violin and played the solo parts himself. He must have been a pretty fine player. H.C. Robbins Landon is the author of the magisterial 5-volume biography of Joseph Haydn. In 1960, he went to the city known in the 18th century as Grossvadin, when it lay within the Austro-Hungarian Empire, now Oradea in modern Romania, to try to discover the famous music library there, in the hopes of tracking down new works by Joseph's brother Michael Haydn. The magnificent Baroque palace built for Michael's employer, the Bishop of Grossvadin, was still there, but the library had been ransacked by German troops during the Second World War and subsequently by marauding refugees. In the organ loft of the cathedral, next door to the palace, he found a few pathetic scraps of music. That was all that remained of the huge collection, which would have included a great many early works by Michael Haydn, and probably, he surmised, of unknown works by his brother. Countless manuscripts had been lost. We do at least have a pretty accurate idea of what the music was that Michael wrote there, and there's plenty of it, including this piece which has survived, a concerto for the unusual combination of viola, organ and string orchestra. This is its buoyant final movement. It must have come as a particular source of frustration and disappointment to his staff of musicians, more than two dozen of them, when the news broke in mid-December 1762 that Bishop Patacic's mother had died. They would have been in the midst of many weeks of careful preparation and rehearsals for the annual and very lavish celebrations of Bishop Adam's name day on the 20th of December. It was all wasted effort, because the custom at that time was for the bishop's court to observe a period of mourning for 2 years. During that time, the musical life of the bishopric would be limited to church services. This was a depressing state of affairs at a court where there was habitually so much musical activity, including theatre performances and regular chamber and orchestral concerts on Tuesdays and Sundays. Michael Haydn was the steady, settled sort, not given to flitting about, but the prospect of an unvarying diet of church music for the next 2 years seems to have been unappetizing to him, and we now find him on the move for what would prove to be the last time in his life. He left Grossvadin to be replaced in charge of the bishop's music by Karl von Dittersdorf. How Haydn got fixed up with the job in Salzburg isn't absolutely clear, but there was an obvious family connection there, though not with his family. It so happened that the Bishop of Grossvadin's uncle was Sigismund Count Schrattenbach, Prince Archbishop of Salzburg, and so it was a straightforward case of nepotism that landed Haydn his new position. The bishop, among whose many titles was also Count Firmian, seems to have mentioned to his uncle that it would be a bit of a waste to have such a talented musician as young Haydn twiddling his thumbs for a couple of years. So Michael Haydn set off for Salzburg in midsummer 1763, travelling, it would seem, by way of Pressburg, where he probably met up with big brother Joseph, who by then had been in the service of the Esterházy family for about a year. As a family, the Haydns went in for long tenures. Prince Archbishop Schrattenbach was an art and music lover of the first order. Although the Salzburg area was then in a period of economic and financial decline in the wake of the Seven Years' War, a series of fires in the region, and a scarcity of foodstuffs, yet Schrattenbach ploughed ahead, spending inordinate amounts on all sorts of projects. At this time, Salzburg consisted of about 700 houses and a population of about 15,000. The city must have looked like a building site when Haydn arrived, because the Prince Archbishop had ordered several new churches to be built. There was also a very ambitious project to extend the town to the west by means of a tunnel to be dug through the Mönchberg. This was the 131-metre-long Siegmundstor. Schrattenbach shared with many princes of his time a taste for the monumental and festive magnificence, and spent lavishly on entertainment of various kinds, music in particular. much of the music the Salzburgers played was of a form that had been born in their city, the orchestral serenade. What we're going to hear is the first spirited movement of what was originally a concertino for a relative newcomer in the Salzburg orchestra, the clarinet, subsequently incorporated in the sixth movement of a serenade Haydn composed about a year after the move to Salzburg. Oh, if only we had clarinets too. So Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart wrote to his father Leopold in 1778. That's a slightly curious comment, since our man Michael Haydn had evidently managed to drum up a far from shabby clarinet player, presumably equipped with an instrument, for a performance of his serenade soon after his arrival in Salzburg in 1763. Though he wrote the serenade right at the start of his Salzburg appointment in 1764, the experts have figured out that Haydn may have had the idea for a work featuring the clarinet during his time back in Grossfardein, where there was a talented player by the name of Fournier. Salzburg must have seemed like a different world from the small town of Grossfardein. It offered a large number of performing venues, and the Archbishop maintained an impressive and very expensive musical establishment, which Leopold Mozart numbered at around 100 by 1757. The streets must have resounded with music of all types. Watchmen blew fanfares from the towers of the town hall. Concerts and serenades were regularly given to celebrate name days, including the Salzburg tradition of performances before the Archbishop in the courtyard of the Schloss Mirabell. These were put on by students at the university, who then processed to the square in front of the university building, the Kollegienplatz, where they'd play for the professors, joined by a host of onlookers and music lovers. The post Michael Haydn took up in Salzburg involved duties as conductor of the Archbishop's court orchestra and composer of sacred works, though in his early days there he was expected to write mainly for the court and university theatres, an area he was never truly at home in. Archbishop Schrattenbach was very fond of opera, but he didn't like castratos, and so Salzburg, exceptionally, had court sopranos on its books. One of these young singers was Maria Magdalena Lipp, the daughter of the cathedral organist Franz Ignaz Lipp. She was one of several Salzburg musicians that Archbishop Schrattenbach generously paid for to go and study in Italy, in Maria's case at the Pietà in Venice. And when she returned at the beginning of 1765, she was given a court appointment. She was then 20. 2 years later, she and Michael Haydn were married, and 2 years after that, they had a child whom they named Aloysia Josepha. Naturally, Maria sang in many works by her husband and by Mozart too. Mozart wrote his Marian hymn Regina Caeli for her. We'll hear next a Marian hymn of Michael's own, an Ave Regina Caelorum for double choir, which he composed in the same year Aloysia was born. Hail, Queen of Heaven, hail, Mistress of Angels, hail, Root, hail, Gate, from which light has arisen from the world. In December 1771, Salzburg was thrown into mourning and turmoil when their ostentatious and charismatic leader, Archbishop Sigmund Schrattenbach, died on the 16th of December. It was a heavy blow and must have created a great deal of uncertainty among all those who worked for him. As court composer, it was expected of Haydn that he'd write a requiem mass for his late employer, and this he duly did. But all through his powerful setting of the Requiem, which he'd completed by the end of the month, its music is heavily invested with profound personal grief. The man who hitherto had been described as perpetually serene was no longer so. His daughter, Aloysia, had died earlier in the year, before her first birthday. The Requiem is one of Michael Haydn's most important sacred works. The magisterial sounds of its trumpets, trombones and drums convey a vivid sense of the solemnity and splendour of the Archbishop's memorial service in Salzburg Cathedral. The entire court music ensemble would have taken part in the service, including, of course, Wolfgang and Leopold Mozart, who just returned from a trip to Italy. We'll hear more about them tomorrow. Scholars have found many parallels between Michael Haydn's setting and Mozart's unfinished masterpiece. There are striking similarities which make it seem likely that Mozart knew this score. We'll hear the Requiem from the Hostias section, beginning Hostias et preces tibi domine laudis offerimus. The Requiem was evidently performed three times in Salzburg on the 2nd, 3rd and 4th of January 1772 during the extended funeral ceremonies for Prince Archbishop Sigmund Schrattenbach. It was performed often thereafter and widely circulated in copies. Parts of it were performed at Haydn's own funeral, and the whole work was presented at the Requiem for his elder brother Joseph in Vienna in 1809. Mozart's famous Requiem, wearing the influence of Michael Haydn on its sleeve, as we'll hear later on today. I'm going to be exploring the many influences and interactions between Michael Haydn and the Mozarts, Wolfgang and his father Leopold, who was deputy director of music at the court of the Archbishop of Salzburg when Haydn arrived in the city. Leopold Mozart had been in the service of the Archbishop of Salzburg for 20 years by the time Michael Haydn came to join the very large establishment of some 100 personnel under the current Archbishop, Sigmund Schrattenbach. Leopold bristled with animosity towards the new arrival. He'd only just been appointed Vice-Kapellmeister for a few months, having been for some time a very considerable irritant to Schrattenbach with his repeated and overextended absences from Salzburg, parading young Wolfgang, then just 7 years old, around the courts of Europe, hoping to get him a post of some kind. In the summer of the year Haydn arrived in Salzburg, the Mozarts were off again, this time heading for the Palace of Versailles. They'd be away for 3.5 years. Haydn was 25 when he made the move to Salzburg. He initially signed up to a 12-month probationary period, At the end of that term, Leopold's continued absence may have encouraged Schrattenbach to appoint him director of the Prince Archbishop's Capella in August 1764 on a monthly salary of 25 florins. It must have rankled with Leopold, though, when this news reached him that Haydn was paid exactly the same as him, despite those 20 years of service to the court. Leopold was sensitive to slights and generally on a short fuse, so it must have infuriated him to discover that Haydn had been granted the right to sit at the officer's table as court musician and concertmaster. Despite his seniority, Leopold was 44 years old by this time. He did not enjoy these privileges. Even when the Mozarts subsequently returned to Salzburg, it was only to be for short periods at a time. Leopold managed to get permission for further trips with his son. During one of these future trips through Italy in 1770, Wolfgang wrote to his sister Nannerl a series of letters about Haydn's quartets. "I prefer Haydn's 6 minuets to his first 12. We've often had to perform them for the Countess and wish we could introduce Italian audiences to the German taste in minuets, as their own minuets last nearly as long as an entire symphony." It was evidently also during this trip that Mozart obtained a copy of Michael Haydn's Symphony in G Major. His possession of it led to some confusion, especially when Mozart wrote a slow introduction and performed it in Linz. It then became known as Mozart's Symphony No. 37, when it was really Michael Haydn's Symphony No. 25. We'll hear it now in its original version. It's actually made up of 3 movements he culled from a work he'd written to an independent commission for the festivities surrounding the election of Nikolaus II Hoffmann as abbot of the Benedictine monastery at Michaelbeuern, not far from Salzburg. On the 15th of December 1771, Leopold and Wolfgang returned from their trip to Italy. They'd been away 2 years, almost to the day. The following day, Archbishop Schrattenbach died. They had stretched his patience to the limit, time after time, but ultimately he'd forgiven them and had sent them off on their Italian journey with a generous gift of 600 gulden. Things would be very different under his successor, Hieronymus Joseph Franz de Paula, Count von Colloredo. He was an altogether less amenable character, a member of a distinguished aristocratic family and a man of the Enlightenment with reforming ideas. He wasn't a popular choice. It took 13 ballots to elect him. Schrattenbach died, leaving the coffers of the Salzburg court in debt. Colloredo was a younger man, autocratic, dictatorial, and determined to get things back on an even keel, to cut back on his predecessor's extravagances, not least the musical ones. He antagonized Leopold by passing him over when the Kapellmeister's post became vacant, going instead for a younger man. Colloredo wasn't a man to brook opposition, and he would famously go on to have a running feud with Wolfgang until the prodigy was finally dismissed in 1781. The presence of a prodigy at court, even if he was mostly absent, certainly caused resentment in some quarters, but not, it seems, with Haydn. The two composers rubbed along pretty well together. Young Mozart still continued to copy Michael Haydn's works, either for study purposes or later for the Sunday concerts that were held in Vienna at the home of the great patron Gottfried van Swieten. Despite Wolfgang's running battle with Colloredo and Leopold's own negative opinion of Haydn, there was a continuing mutual respect between the two young composers, and a friendly sense of competition between them seemed to spur each other on. Haydn's quintet, subtitled Notturno, clearly inspired Mozart to compose his first quintet later the same year, 1773. Haydn's response was to write another of his own later that year. Mozart added a trio to his first effort. Haydn's wife Maria performed in works by both men, though evidently the Mozart family didn't approve of her. Unfortunately, history doesn't relate the grounds of their disapproval. Though there was respect for Haydn's musical abilities, we find Leopold, for instance, writing about Haydn's incidental music to Voltaire's play Zaire, full of praise. "Herr Haydn is a man whose accomplishments in music you will not deny." Yet they didn't mix socially. In this next music by Haydn, from that incidental music to Zaire, which he composed in 1777, we find him bringing in so-called Turkish effects, which were then in vogue. His use of bass drum, cymbals and triangle must have influenced Mozart in his opera Die Entführung aus dem Serai of 1782, with its exotic setting in a Turkish harem, and then his Rondo alla Turca the following year. These effects became so popular that contemporary pianos even had them built in, operated by a pedal. In this recording of Haydn's music, the effects are all produced by real percussionists. The same year as he composed that music, 1777, Haydn succeeded Anton Cajetan Adelgasser in his post as organist at Holy Trinity Church in Salzburg. This was another of those slights that Leopold Mozart took ill. He'd had his eye on that job for Wolfgang. Despite Leopold's occasional praise of Haydn's music, as I just cited, there was an undercurrent of something rather less positive on Leopold's part. When he first heard of Haydn's new appointment, he wrote to Wolfgang, "Who do you think's been appointed organist at Holy Trinity? Herr Haydn. Everyone's laughing. It'll be an expensive appointment. After each litany, he swills a quart of wine." A few months later, he reported to Wolfgang, "In the afternoon, Haydn played the organ during the litany and the Te Deum when the Archbishop was present, but so abominably that we were all aghast and thought he might be going the way of Adelgasser of pious memory. But he was just a bit tipsy, which made his head and his hands refuse to agree. He's likely to drink himself into dropsy within a few years, or at any rate, as he's now getting too lazy for anything else, he'll go on getting lazier and lazier." That sort of remark stands in stark contrast to what we hear from one of the monks at the Church of St. Peter, where Haydn eventually had a monument put up to him. His character was quiet, discreet modesty. Drinking and gambling were far removed from him. Moderation in thinking, speaking, even in judging other musical works, were what made him beloved and valued. One hardly imagines they'd have put up a monument to a drunk, and Leopold's charge of laziness hardly stands up when you look at the amount of music Haydn wrote over the coming decades. But even stingy Leopold was full of praise for the work we're going to hear from next. "Mon très cher fils," he wrote to Wolfgang, "this very moment I have returned from the service in the cathedral. The oboe mass by Haydn was performed, conducted by the composer. The offertory, too, was composed for this occasion. Yesterday, after Vespers, they rehearsed it. I enjoyed it all tremendously, because it involved 6 oboists, 3 double basses, 2 bassoons, and the castrato, who has been engaged for 6 months at 100 florins a month. The whole thing lasted an hour and a quarter, and to me it all seemed too short, because it was really excellently written." Leopold may have called it the Oboe Mass, but Haydn had given it a more resonant title, cannily dedicating it to St. Hieronymus, Hieronymus being Archbishop Colloredo's first name. When the tension which had been building up between Wolfgang Mozart and Archbishop Colloredo finally came to a head, with Mozart repeatedly asking for release from the Archbishop's employment, he got what he wanted in the end. Literally in the end, since the Archbishop's dismissal came with a kick in the backside from his chamberlain, Count Arco. Mozart was off to Vienna, and that was to Haydn's advantage. He was appointed to take over Mozart's vacant role as court and cathedral organist. Whatever his father's condescending carping about Haydn, Wolfgang Mozart always remained on good terms with him, and we don't find him making critical remarks about his drinking. 2 years after he left, in the summer of 1783, Mozart returned to Salzburg from Vienna on a visit. He found Haydn was ill and struggling to complete a commission from the Archbishop for 6 duos for violin and viola. He'd written 4 of them, but in an act of real friendship, Mozart helped him out by writing the final 2 for Haydn to pass off as his own. We'll hear the final movement of one of the sonatas Haydn did complete. Years after Wolfgang helped his friend Haydn on a visit to Salzburg in 1787, his father Leopold died. This sad Mozart departure was another one which worked to Haydn's advantage, as he began to take on teaching commitments that had previously been Leopold's. Meanwhile, Wolfgang was clearly still an admirer of Haydn's music. In 1788, we find him writing to his sister Nannerl, by then living in St. Gilgen, "I should be glad if Haydn would lend me his 2 Tutti Masses in score for a while. I would return them with best thanks. Invite him to come to you and play him some of my later things. The trio and quartet would not displease him." The friendly rivalry between the two composers came to an end 3 years later, when, in early December 1791, Wolfgang died in Vienna, leaving his Requiem unfinished. Which brings us full circle to where we started today. As I mentioned already, there are many parallels and similarities between Haydn's Requiem for Archbishop Schrattenbach and Mozart's famous setting of the Mass for the Dead, such as the walking bass at the beginning and the syncopated violin lines at the choir's first fugal entry. Mozart uses the same melodies to set certain important lines of the text, such as Et Lux Perpetua. Mozart would certainly have been familiar with Haydn's Requiem. It was performed several times in Salzburg, and we know what a retentive mind he had, able to recall entire pieces after hearing them only once. We heard the conclusion of Haydn's Requiem for Archbishop Schrattenbach yesterday. Today we'll end by hearing the Dies Irae. It'll only cost you €2 to get in, though it's only open from July to September, and then only in the afternoons. But the promise is that it will show you aspects of Baroque and classical music that you will not learn about in the mainstream Mozartiana that Salzburg has been celebrating for 200 years. I'm talking about the little museum dedicated to Michael Haydn, which stands opposite the pretty Benedictine Abbey Church of St. Peter in Salzburg. In the church itself, where Haydn often conducted and played the organ, you can see in a side chapel a memorial to the composer. It's a rather odd structure, like the base of an obelisk, topped by a lyre, symbolic of Orpheus, god of music, or of Apollo, I suppose, leaning against a black marble urn. It's a rather macabre touch that the urn actually contains Haydn's head. I don't know whose idea it was to separate it from his body, but the rest of him lies buried in the nearby cemetery of St. Peter's, where, for some reason, he shares his grave with Mozart's sister, Nanno. Haydn and his wife lived in an apartment owned by the Abbey, which now houses the station at the foot of the funicular railway that transports tourists who don't fancy the steep climb to the fortress at Hohensalzburg, which dominates the city. The Johann Michael Haydn Society's archive still contains a manuscript copy of Haydn's Mass in honour of St. Ursula, which he wrote for a Benedictine convent on an island in the Chiemsee. It's thought he wrote it for the service at which his friend Ursula Oswald took her final vows as a nun. This is the Gloria. Gloria from Michael Haydn's St. Ursula Mass, also known as the Chiemsee Mass, we heard the voices of Carolyn Sampson, Hilary Summers, James Gilchrist and Peter Harvey, with the choir of the King's Consort and the King's Consort conducted by Robert King. Haydn was evidently an open-minded, well-meaning individual who had, aside from music, an interest in the natural sciences, history and literature. We're told he was fond of serious conversations with his friends. For his intimate correspondence with his friend Benedict Hacker, he used a secret code consisting of a chromatic scale, clefs and wrists. And as an enthusiastic nature lover, he left notes on 20 years of detailed meteorological observations. Following the death of Prince Archbishop Christoph Sigmund von Schrattenbach, who'd been a generous patron of the arts and of the city of Salzburg itself, his successor, Hieronymus Colloredo, did not endear himself to the people of Salzburg in anything like the same way, and to one citizen in particular, one of his employees, he would become a figure of contempt and hatred, vilified by posterity as a venomous thorn in Mozart's side. Colloredo instituted a programme of reforms inspired by his consuming interest in Enlightenment ideas, and these brought about a significant change in the cultural life of Salzburg, which, it was generally felt, was not for the better. In his determination to get budgets under control, after inheriting the very substantial debts which Schrattenbach had left behind, amongst other cutbacks, Colloredo restricted the activities of the university theatre. It was closed permanently in 1778. One of the most immediate effects of his reforms was that churchgoers got rather less music with their mass than they'd been used to, as the archbishop imposed time limits on services. Masses weren't to last longer than 45 minutes. German hymns were to be included in all services, while elements of local colour and fizz were drained too, as the archbishop took the bang, literally, out of church processions, forbidding the traditional firing of cannons. We get an insight into Colloredo's mindset in a pastoral letter of 1782, in which he complains that, "In our churches, every good thought is driven out of the heart of the common people by the miserable fiddling, and horrible howling only invites stupidity and inattention." There was an upside to Colloredo's reforms for Haydn, though. As a direct result of them, he was kept busy composing during the 1780s in excess of 100 revised simple homophonic settings of the Mass, as well as editing a big new German-language hymnal, Heiliger Gesang. In fact, almost half of Haydn's very substantial output of more than 800 compositions were for the church. Let's hear one of the responsories Haydn wrote for Holy Week a few years after Colloredo came to power. This is the one for Good Friday. Despite Archbishop Colloredo's zealous pursuit of his reforms, Haydn flourished in these years, composing his best-known choral works between 1771 and 77. He was instrumental in the shortening of the Mass settings, and by the time of those responsories, despite Leopold Mozart's allegations of regular drunkenness and carping about other aspects of his lifestyle, Haydn was said to be in the running for the post of Director of Music at the Salzburg court. One authority points out, by mid-career, Haydn enjoyed an international reputation as a composer of great distinction. He was especially renowned for his church works, which critics, amateur and connoisseur alike, regarded as models of their kind. An 18th-century journal suggested that, on the basis of his sacred music, and precisely in the pure church style and truly proper religious music, Michael Haydn certainly has very few amongst his contemporaries who could claim, honourably, to be his rivals. After the closure of the University Theatre in 1778, and presumably restricted opportunities for writing serenades and divertimentos and the like, the 1780s saw Haydn concentrating on instrumental music, composing 20 symphonies. Many of Haydn's orchestral marches and minuet cycles date from these years too. Music was often performed during dinner at court, and in addition there was a demand for occasional pieces for birthdays and name days, and there were private performances in the homes of members of the nobility. Despite his reforms to curtail the amount of music in church services, Archbishop Colloredo was a musical man. He played the violin and liked to join the musicians during the court's evening musical entertainments. As a result, the demand for chamber music and symphonies cranked up. We'll hear one of Haydn's symphonies now from the middle of the decade. This one has a variety of numbers to identify it, 24 in Purger's catalogue, 425 in the list of Haydn's works. It was obviously a work which remained in Haydn's mind. 11 years after he originally composed it, in three movements, he returned to it and added a minuet third movement to make it a four-movement symphony, though I challenge you to spot the join. The match in style is perfect. Michael Haydn was, it has to be said, the beneficiary several times of traumatic events in the lives of the Mozart family. So Wolfgang's big bust-up with the Archbishop probably created a certain amount of headroom for Haydn. Given what an irritant both Mozarts, father and son, were to their employer Colloredo, after Leopold's death in 1787, Haydn's presence, taking over the teaching of the choir boys in the cathedral choir, was felt to be a very positive change. There's a supposition that Haydn found working with these children a particular pleasure, having none of his own after the death of his daughter Aloysia as an infant. Among Haydn's pupils were Karl Maria von Weber, Sigismund von Neukomm, the keyboard virtuoso Josef Wölfel, who was known in his day as a rival to Beethoven, and the composer and publisher Anton Diabelli. Haydn's pupils helped spread his fame beyond the boundaries of Salzburg. One of them, Georg Johann Schinn, left Salzburg in 1808 to take up a position in the court chapel in Munich, where he performed Haydn's Latin and German sacred music regularly throughout the 19th century. Anton Diabelli, who became a friend of Haydn's, was involved in the publication of many of Haydn's sacred works by the Viennese publishing firm which later bore his name. Sigismund Neukomm left Salzburg for Vienna, where he studied with Michael's brother Joseph, presumably again helping to spread Michael's reputation. Among the works to be found in the Michael Haydn archive in Salzburg that I mentioned at the start is one which demonstrates just how far his reputation had spread, a setting of the Mass which was commissioned from him in 1796 by the Spanish court. His Missa Hispanica is for double choir, orchestra and organ, and as H.C. Robbins Landon points out, it was written, curiously enough, close to the date of the commission issued from Cadiz to Joseph Haydn for his seven last words. From the Missa Hispanica, we'll hear the majestic Sanctus and Benedictus. You might imagine a phalanx of students proudly clutching the scrolls of their final diplomas and marching to that music through the streets of Salzburg. That was a set of three marches which Michael Haydn composed in Salzburg in the late 1780s, very likely for the celebrations which accompanied the end of the university year. That was just one of the round of events which kept Michael Haydn busily creative. Life in Salzburg suited him well. He found the atmosphere and company stimulating and absorbing, and there was plenty of opportunity for writing vocal and instrumental music, serving the range of venues the city offered. The Archbishop's Palace, the Residenz, the Cathedral, St. Peter's Abbey, the Great Hall of the University, and the two outdoor theatres at the Archbishop's pleasure palaces, Schloss Hellbrunn and Schloss Mirabell. By all accounts, except Leopold Mozart's, Michael Haydn was an amiable, even-tempered man. According to the monks of St. Peter's Abbey, calm, prudent, modest, temperate in thought and speech. We have no history of conflict with his employer, Archbishop Colloredo, as we do with Mozart. Unlike Wolfgang Mozart, Haydn wasn't an ambitious man. Whereas Mozart travelled the length and breadth of Europe, Haydn was a stay-at-home sort of chap. His world was small, and he seems to have been content with its limited scale. Although his reputation reached as far as Spain, physically his world extended to just the city boundaries of Salzburg, and Haydn didn't leave the city until after he was 60 years old. It took the danger of war to get him to make a move. With rumours of the possible advance of Napoleon's armies, Haydn decided it was time for him to go and visit his elder brother Joseph in Vienna. Joseph was by then famous throughout Europe. They would have found each other much changed. According to one report, they hadn't seen each other in 27 years. For about 10 days, in late October, they saw each other every day, and an affection was rekindled between them, which would grow stronger over the next few years. Evidently, at one point, they were looking over some canons Joseph had composed, and Michael asked his permission to make copies of them, to which Joseph responded, "Get away with your copies. You can compose much better ones yourself." Michael returned to Salzburg, and before long, the situation was serious. In early December 1800, the Archbishop fled from the city, and 4 days later, the French marched in. Napoleon's forces occupied Salzburg, and the following month, Haydn opened the door to his apartment to find himself looking down the barrels of a pair of pistols levelled at him by 2 French hussars. They demanded that he hand over all his valuables, and he was in no position to refuse. They took everything they could carry, including 2 silver watches and 3 months' salary. When Michael's elder brother Joseph got to hear of this, he responded generously, sending him money, a gold snuff-box, and a gold watch, presumably not the watch which Nelson had supposedly given Joseph Haydn in exchange for the worn-out pen with which he'd written the Creation the previous September. Joseph promised to send more money as soon as the dividends on some of his investments came through. Joseph also helped out by getting his brother a commission for a mass from the Empress Maria Theresa, and in September 1801, Michael returned to Vienna to take charge of the rehearsals. These were no ordinary rehearsals, since the Empress herself sang the solo soprano part in one of the performances. Haydn also brought with him a setting of the Te Deum. When Michael visited his brother Joseph in Vienna, people apparently recognised him in the streets and called, "Look, there's Haydn from Salzburg." He made useful contacts and won plaudits for his music and for his talents as performer, especially on the organ. The Empress Maria Theresa must have enjoyed her performance too, because in its wake further commissions came Michael's way. After that performance, which he conducted, Haydn wrote home to his wife Maria in Salzburg that the Empress sang her solos, at first timidly, with increasing confidence, all correctly and with fine taste. But what delighted me especially was her evident satisfaction with my composition. Again and again she exclaimed, "Bravo! Beautiful! Haydn! Superb!" After this royal occasion, Michael then travelled with Joseph to Eisenstadt, and there all 3 Haydn brothers, yes, there was another, much younger brother, Johann Haydn, who was born in 1743 and died in 1805, were able to meet for the first time in many a long year. Johann, too, was musical, a singer at the court in Eisenstadt. During his visit, Prince Nicolaus Esterhazy offered Michael the prestigious position of director of music to the court. Given what he was going back to in Salzburg, with the city's music-making hedged about by the archbishop's strictures, this was surely an opportunity Haydn would have jumped at. But he turned it down. That was a decision he came to regret. In 1804, he was elected a foreign member of the Royal Swedish Academy of Music, which kept him busy, not with new commissions, but copying out his old works for the Academy's archive. By this time, Haydn's secular works were also beginning to reach publishers further afield, such as Breitkopf and Hertel in Leipzig, who first encountered his music in 1771 in a pair of works from Haydn's first period of employment at the court in Grosswardein. They passed these works on to an ardent music lover in Zittau, a businessman called August Christian Exner, who organised performances of them in private concerts in the 1780s and 90s. Haydn's Salzburg works took much longer to reach wider audiences because of his seclusion in the city. Let's hear one of those early Salzburg works that might have been reaching audiences further afield for the first time, a trumpet concerto which began life, as many of Haydn's Salzburg concertos did, as the central part of a serenade. It was composed during the period when Leopold and Wolfgang Mozart were off on their marathon European tour, and Haydn's duties were presumably extended. It certainly demonstrates the virtuosity of the musicians in the Salzburg Court Orchestra at the time. As you'll hear, he takes the trumpet to the top of its range. Although Haydn was becoming better known outside Salzburg, inside the city he had financial problems. The invasion of the French had damaged the economy. After the departure of the Archbishop and the secularisation of the city, Haydn's new boss was a Habsburg Archduke. The change brought bitter times for Haydn. Far from getting promotion to the role of Kapellmeister or even Vice-Kapellmeister, Haydn was demoted, stripped of his concertmaster title, and left only as cathedral organist. At one stage, there was a recommendation from the Chamberlain, Count Arco, he whose boot made such famous contact with Mozart's posterior, that Haydn should be awarded a salary of 800 florins, still only half what Prince Esterhazy had offered. Count Arco argued that this was justified by Haydn's many years of service and his widespread fame in the category of church music. The Archduke didn't agree, pointing out that he had a general preference for Italian music. It seems that, jaded and negative, though he could sometimes be about his own abilities, this was an area where Haydn had remained eternally optimistic and Micawberish, that something would turn up, that his conditions there would improve. He was bitterly disappointed, as he told his brother Joseph some time later, apologising for a long silence on his side. "I didn't write because I was ashamed of myself. I was astonished when I received my contract," he said. "They had always kept me in hopes and in promises, and so time went by. My entire increase in salary for the whole year consists of not more than 150 gulden." He now regrets, and how, not having taken the Eisenstadt job. "If I could have foreseen this, I would have accepted with both hands the generous offer of your prince. Why didn't I do so at the first opportunity?" That sad little glimpse is all the more poignant, as it's the only letter we have from Michael to his elder brother. Fortunately, other Habsburgs valued his services, and commissions continued to arrive from the Empress Maria Theresa. Haydn completed another Mass commissioned by her for the Emperor's name day, and he reckoned it was among his best works, the Missa Subtitulo Sancti Franceschi. The music is full of a joyous, wonderfully propulsive energy.
Yeah.
The Mass was first heard in Vienna in 1805. The Empress commissioned a further work from Haydn, a setting of the Requiem, but he didn't live to complete it. Although Haydn expected the coming spring to bring an improvement in his health, it didn't, and he died, with friends and students at his bedside, on the 10th of August, 1806. All connoisseurs of music know, and have known for some time, that as a composer of sacred music, Michael Haydn ranks among the finest of any age or nations. In this field, he is fully his brother's equal. In fact, by the seriousness of his concept, he often surpasses him by far. No less than the writer E.T.A. Hoffmann, remembering Haydn in a prominent journal in 1812. Although the Habsburg court in Salzburg appeared to show him scant regard in his last years, Haydn was such a respected figure in Salzburg that, as I mentioned at the start of the week, 15 years after his death, in 1821, a memorial in his honour was set up there in the Abbey Church of St. Peter's, where he'd played the organ and directed performances for so many years, and which he'd lived most of his adult life in the shadow of. As I mentioned too, for some reason it was thought appropriate to detach Haydn's head and put it in the urn that stands on top of the monument. Franz Schubert came to pay his respects, and standing in front of the monument he said, "The good Haydn, it almost seemed as if his clear, calm spirit were hovering over me. I may be neither calm nor clear, but no man reveres him more than I. My eyes were filled with tears as we came away."